Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. And next up, it's one of our newest shows on News for the Soul, Call of the Soul. How perfect is that? With Ray Falconberry. Let's bring Ray on to reintroduce himself, his show, and his guest, and what's up for today. Ray, welcome back.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing this afternoon?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a busy day, but it's always exciting to get a chance to touch base with you and to visit with hopefully some interesting people who come on and share some of their wisdom. So I'm real grateful. You know, it's interesting because one of the things I'd like to do, Nicole, before I guess a guest comes on, and I know you've had so many amazing experiences, so I always feel like I want to ask you a question and get your take on whatever the topic we might be talking a little bit about today. So I guess the question I'd ask is, you know, in our previous shows, you introduced me and we got a chance to visit with Jeff a couple of weeks ago. And we talked about business and families and education. And today, as we talk about education, I guess the question I'd want maybe you to share is, if you think back on your educational experiences, what was the most valuable thing, if there was the most valuable thing you learned in your public education, and what was the least valuable thing that you felt you gained?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
I know there was something valuable there.
Yeah, there must be. It kind of escapes me right now. Maybe the more creative, you know, things that touched on my inner creativity, like the music and writing and anything like that. But yeah, a lot of it, I mean, it's just regurgitation, memorized stuff that you never use again, and off you go, you know.
I I'm so glad you hit that first question that way, because to me, it just marvels to me that we don't teach aspects of creativity or inner awareness, or, you know, topics that we talked about before, whether it be dance or music or spirituality or anything along those lines. And I find it kind of fascinating that, you know, that is that, and I think a lot of people would say, is their most exciting classes are those ones where they get to be creative and such.
Yes.
Because again, regurgitating facts and figures is painful. It's just painful. So I guess
facts and figures that you never need again. I mean, it's literally a busy work and a waste of time and silly, you know. It's just, and you know it at the time, you know. But the creativity, for sure, anything that kind of stirs your inner soul, and you know, that was probably the only memorable parts for me anyway.
Was there a subject in particular that was more painful than other ones, though? I'm just curious.
Math. Who the hell uses that stuff? Seriously, we have calculators. That's all we need. We're good to go. I mean, good Lord.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's so funny.
Unless you want to be a physicist or a rocket scientist, like, what's the point?
Oh yeah. I used to tell my kids, and they heard this, and I've shared this, but I just wanted my kids in public education to, you know, learn to read, write, do basic computation, and if anything, learn how to at least research, so they could go, you know, and be curious, and then the rest would be, you know, what can you discover, what talents can you find, and how can you do that. So I never really pressed them on the grade part, because I told him it was going to be a painful experience. And, you know, I didn't mean to set it in motion that way, but, you know, when we think back on it, the repetition of sitting there and listening to, you know, go over mathematical theories that, again, we never used, or history that we never used, which may or may not be true anyway. So it just...
Yeah, right.
It really did just pose an interesting question to me, because I just had such difficulty. Even though I did okay in school, I couldn't stand it. And so it's interesting, because the guest that I wanted to bring on is, to me, a really interesting, in some ways unique young man that I think may offer some interesting perspectives on, you know, his view of education and what he's experienced, because he's kind of bridged this gap of public school and then now in college. So I'll be kind of curious to see. And he has an interesting faith base that he is, you know, pursuing. But in our climate, I think it can be a painful option, and there's some landmines out there. So I'm really excited to get a chance to chat with him about it.
Well, I believe he's on the line if you want to introduce your guest.
Yeah. Harrison is a young man. Harrison Powell is, and I'll let him speak in a second, but I'll just introduce him as he is one of my college students at Dabbler Valley College. And he's also in something called College Now. And I find him just to be a fascinating and amazing young man in so many different ways. And so I wanted to come on and share a little bit of his experience and wisdom of what he's learned and maybe help some people maybe understand kind of what's going on in our public and institutions as far as school and then, you know, as we approach college. So I'm looking forward to having him on. Harrison, are you there?
Hello, Ray. Can you hear me?
I am. It's good to hear you. Thank you for jumping on the call and being willing to spend some time with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is an honor to be here. Thanks for having me here. I'm an 18-year-old who has some wisdom and yet does a lot of stupid 18-year-old things, as you know of. So,
no.
It's good to be here.
No, I'm grateful, Harrison. And I guess I'd like to just start, if you would, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit about the kind of unique program you're in, because you're, even though you're a senior, you finished your first year of college. And so if you would just kind of talk a little bit about what your educational at least path has been up to this point.
No. So yeah. How it worked was went to private school from kindergarten to eighth grade and then transitioned into public school and was at College Park High School, which is a public school in this area that I'm at, for my freshman and sophomore year. And then my sophomore year, they advertised this program called College Now, as you said. And College Now is simply just a program that's called middle college or dual enrollment, as some people say. And over there, you have the opportunity to take high school classes and college classes all at your local community college. And at your local community college, you're able to finish up your first or second or your second year of college all in your junior and senior year. So it's a great program. I really enjoyed my time there. So, yeah, that's a little bit how it works.
I didn't know that you did some private school work. I'm just curious, what would you say was the big difference as you went from the private school environment into public school? Was that an easy transition, or was there some shock involved?
Oh, man. there was a lot of shock. There was a lot of shock. It's, as I like to say, private school was a very, very bubble-wrapped environment, I'd say. I was Christian at home. I had Christian influences at home, had Christian influences at school. I had church on Sundays, and it was every day, every hour, all the time, Christianity 24/7. And then the moment I jumped into public school, and I was lucky that my first year was online during COVID, because that kind of helped cushion the shock a little bit, but still, the complete just 180 degree turn upside down of completely different views on science, completely different views on family values, completely different views of church and how we should live life. And I'm kind of hearing this and my jaw is just completely dropped for like 6 hours of the day, that whole year online during COVID. And I'm just shocked and in awe that there's a completely different world.
No, hold it. You said something that just got me. You're telling me I can see maybe, and I don't know, because I just want to draw this out, because you said crack me up. that you, there was not, it wasn't a subtle shift. You were getting a certain frame of information and education, and then you got something drastically different. You said stuff like family values and such. Can you give me an example? I'm curious about this. What was
like,
different?
I mean, how it was different is just, for example, let's talk about family values. Let's talk about how at my private school, they always taught there was a nuclear family of the mom, the dad, two kids, dog, white picket fence, and a nice four-bedroom house or whatever. And that was kind of the stereotypical goal that you wanted. And honestly, me personally, I'd still like that with my faith-based life and how I live. And then at public school, though, the completely different ideologies and belief systems. And I'm not one to judge, and I'm not one to say certain things or whatever, and you can do whatever you want with your life. But over there at public school, just teaching the idea of, yeah, just practice safe sex and use condoms. And there's a birth control that you can use to also help prevent pregnancies. And there's just new things such as two moms or two dads, or a mom that's technically a dad and a dad that's technically a mom. And just that, it was just completely upside down from the past 10 years I had grown up with, of like, whoa.
Wow.
This is what people think, and in a way, that shock with how much of an impact it made, it gave me an opportunity, though, to understand where other people are coming from. It gave me an opportunity to understand other people's cultures. It gave me the opportunity to understand how people work outside of my Christian bubble, and kind of gave me an advantage compared to a lot of other Christians, actually, in being able to reach them. So.
Yeah, you know, that's fascinating, because I'm glad you were honest about the bubble wrap, because, you know, as much as we can paint this wonderful kind of utopian, you know, world of idealism, and, you know, everybody has a happy, healthy mom and dad, and everybody loves, it's kind of like a Brady Bunch thing. I know you're too young to remember the Brady Bunch, but the Brady Bunch
was my favorite show growing up.
Okay, well, the real world isn't really the Brady Bunch. It wasn't.
No.
No, but I love that, you know, it, one of the great things is that when we do get outside our bubble, we do get to see a different world. And I think that is incredibly invaluable. It reminds me of, and I don't know if you've studied this, I remembered it from my seminary, but just real briefly, you know, the Buddha, before he became the Buddha, was this, you know, amazing prince of great royalty. And he thought the whole world, Siddhartha, was all about royalty and wonderfulness, and you live forever, and it's just massive wealth and stuff. And just to make this long story short, he ventured outside his palatial grounds and was blown away when he saw, you know, two things that struck him. One was an old person, and two was a sick person. And so he had lived in such a shocked space that he did not know that there was suffering in the world. And so to me, when I hear that, I think people get a chance to see outside their, as you say, the bubble, it is absolutely invaluable. Because the whole world is never the simple way that any of us just view it, you know, in a sense that we can look at it from a Christian or an energy or a Buddhist or a Hindu, any kind of perspective, and they're going to see it from that world. So I'm super glad you got to see that diversity of how people live their life. And there's one other thing I wanted to mention. As you transitioned then from the public high school, and then you got to the college now, you went from this bubble, then you went into this, I'll just call it this wide open view of a whole different kind of world in public high school. And then in the college now, in this last year of doing that, you're now with essentially the same small group of students for every class. So this is like three incredibly diverse educational environments. And so I'm really curious if you can talk about what was it like to be in the same classroom with the same 17, 18-year-old students for the whole year. It's not like you had a 500, population class in your senior class. You've got a super small class. And so I'm real curious about that experience with them all day long, every day this school year.
Yeah, no. So talking about diverse school transitions, it's funny because I went from private school. Then I kind of went to like online school. Then I had to 1 year at a big public high school. And now I went another year, the last 2 years, at program of the same people for the last 2 years. We're only two people left and two people came in. So, my past 4 years of schooling have been very interesting and very cool to see how completely different and how many experiences I've had in such a short time. But I will say just that first year at this program, my junior year, man, I loved it. Oh, man. I think that it's funny because I loved it. It was great. It was amazing. I think it was the best year of schooling for me. I loved the community there. I loved the people there. It was great. It was awesome. I felt like I was a part of something. I felt as if I was leading something. And the thing about that, though, was the funny thing is that I went to the public high school and I had all this ideology and stuff. And honestly, when I transitioned over to this program, it was like that, but just 10 times more pushing these ideologies of different things and different sexuality, just on another scale, just multiplied by 300. Just an insane amount. But I loved it, though. It was cool to learn. It was cool to see people's opinions, and I was learning more, and I was able to understand people more. I was able to relate my life, the Bible, and things like that with their life and say, hey, you're going through this, and I can meet them where they're at and what position they're at, and they're down low, if they're feeling lost, if they're feeling stuck. But anyways, my junior year was flipping awesome. I loved it. Oh, man, junior year was great. And then I came back to this second year at this program in my first 4 months and first 4 to 5 months. Oh, man, it was the same thing. I loved it. It was great. It was awesome. And then we'll get honest, open, and transparent here, Ray. You know the phrase I like to use, which is hot. Honest, open, and transparent. So, this second half of the year, and you're already laughing. This is great. This second half of the year, though, if we're going to talk about things I've learned and being able to be popped out of my bubble, growing up and still to this day, I never really had any difficulties with people. Never really had any difficulties communicating with people. Never really had any problem with people disliking me. Never really had any problems with people being against me. And kind of this around that fifth month of this year, fifth, sixth month, and I was having some trouble with some people. I was having some difficulties with just people saying certain things about me and attacking me for things I believed, or even just small comments of like if I made a joke or whatever and something that somebody didn't like, of me saying, oh, I'm not a big fan of that movie. I don't know why, but I got so attacked for that. Like, oh, you're so rude for not liking this movie. I can't believe you'd say that you don't like this movie. This is just so insane of you. That's so hurtful. And it sounds like they were saying it in a sarcastic way. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. You think it's sarcastic? And no, but they were serious. They were really serious. The fact that I said something that they didn't like, I didn't like a movie or I didn't like a certain team. And people were just always had something against me for some reason this year. And
so do you think part of that could have been, is that possibly due to one of a couple things? One is, we're 17, 18 years old. So while we might have this wonderful cognitive ability to process great information and do calculus and advanced physics, that doesn't necessarily mean we're emotionally very mature or emotionally really intelligent. It could it be partially that, and could it also be Were they a little bit taken aback by you coming out with such a strong faith belief?
It is 100% everything you said. it's the fact that I'm the only student in that classroom who has such a strong faith belief. And I know other people in that classroom who are Mormon, and other people are of other religions. And the one who comes closer to me and how expressive I am and how open I am with my faith is the Mormon. And, but compared to everybody else, though, compared to me, I'm the one who talks about it 24/7. I say things all the time. I tell people what I really think. I'm honest with them. I tell them how I really feel about certain things. But I say it in a way that's not aggressive or rude. But at the same time, they see that. And going to now the emotionally intelligent side, I feel as if a lot of students, including me, I'm a part of this too, is that whenever somebody is against us, because we've grown up with parents supporting us, friends supporting us, teachers supporting us, people in our neighborhood supporting us, and we have this massive support system that once we grow up and we come against people who have different ideologies and people have different views and people act differently and people who don't think the same, it's kind of like these people are taken aback and they think, well, just because you don't agree with me, now you're hurting my feelings, and that's not right, and you shouldn't be doing that. And so I feel as if people don't understand how to deal with something that goes against their values, with somebody who disagrees with them, and they don't have that intelligence or that capability to actually work with that person and say, well, I see where you're coming from at this point. They don't have the ability to have a conversation. And for me personally, the thing I think that has helped me with that, though, at an earlier age is since I've been so open about it, and I'm open about it in the streets, talking to people, talking with people in the neighborhood who are against me or against Christianity. And I have so many conversations that I've come to this point where I'm able to have a conversation with somebody and somebody can disagree with me and we're going to be A-okay because I have the ability to understand that I'm not going to influence this person. Nothing I can say can make this person change their mind. Nothing I can do can make this person change their mind. The only thing that can happen is me plant a seed in their mind, and then they can come up with their own decision with their own time frame on their own ability to be able to make decision of if they want to be a Christian or if they don't want to be a Christian. So going back to the point of the reason why people get taken aback is definitely a mix of both, because they've never had to deal with somebody going against them, and they – are also taken aback by the fact that I have so many different things and they don't have the emotional intelligence to actually deal with that. So,
well, one of the challenges that I've always found with so many people, and it can even go into adulthood, is, you know, we can talk about critical thinking and looking at any topic. And one of the challenges is this inability to look at another side. One of the challenges, aside from that, though, is, you know, Harrison, sometimes when we're forming our identity and we're forming our personality that's going to become our adult self, you know, we're not always so secure. And so if somebody kind of comes across as secure, whether or not we're of that philosophy or not, it can kind of make us feel like, gosh, he or she is so confident and I'm not. And there can be that little rub, that little resistance of, you know, God, I wish I was that way. And they don't say it in necessarily the nicest way. It can just be kind of a projection that we've talked about.
Yeah.
I'm going to bounce. I'm going to come back to something in a minute because I want to kind of get a well-rounded view before we bounce into maybe something a little more challenging. What about the teachers at the experience you've had? Just if you can speak just for a couple minutes or so on just the variety and the different levels of teachers and instructors you've had through your school. I'm just curious as to that, you know, kind of versatility or variety.
Teacher-wise, it can really be a hit or miss. I've had great teachers. We'll give an example of one of my teachers. He never even taught any of my classes. He was just one of my study hall teachers. His name's Mr. Atterbury. Mr. Atterbury was, oh, man, he is one of those people that is kind of If it weren't for him, I probably wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. So I'm grateful for him and everything he's done in my life. But the thing about Mr. Atterbury is, though, he's just so open. He's easy to talk to. The thing also that helped me a lot was the fact that he has that same belief system that I have. He has the same religious belief that I do. And having that at the public school, my first and second year, and he's been my club advisor ever since then, has been such a helpful way to transition me into this whole system, into this whole new world that I've come across, kind of like Aladdin, a whole new world.
The best part about that is finding that tribe, whether or not it's not even your age. It's just finding people that are similar to you. But remember though that when we don't find similarity, it can be difficult because we have people that, you know, I've talked to at school and I'm sure you've met them where they haven't found their quote, their tribe, their people, the people that are similar and support them. And I think that's why it's so incredibly important that we universally, you know, look to not only understand and learn about people, but care about them, be compassionate so that we can meet them with what I would say is, you know, that loving kind of open discovery kind of mindset in that way. So that was a good teacher. What was it challenging? How would you describe a challenging or not so effective teacher in your experience that you've had?
I've had a lot more challenging teachers though than good teachers. I've had in high school, I'd say I've had two good teachers. But then the challenging teachers have all been, I had one teacher, and I was always open about my faith, always open, as I said. And I was talking to him in class, and I was talking to him about Jesus and a relationship with God that I had. And I told him that I had a club and that we had pizza there at College Park. And one of the teachers looks at me, and I kind of tell him, yeah, we have around 60, 80 kids that go. Then whenever it's a really good day, we usually average about 100 kids that go to the classroom. And he looks at me and he says, oh, but you know that the only reason why they're going to your club is the pizza. And I kind of looked at him and I go, yeah, I know the only reason why they go is because of the pizza, but the reason why they stay is for something greater. So I've had multiple teachers challenge me on my faith. I've had multiple teachers kind of just look at me differently, especially this year. I had one of my teachers at the College Now program actually kind of just look at me a little differently with how I am with my faith and just sees me a little differently and just kind of like, oh, wow, your beliefs are really weird and I don't agree with them. And I would write about my beliefs in some of my English papers. And he was not too happy about that. And so I would get a lower score. And I think the reason that I have a challenge is not even because the teachers are bad or the teachers are bad with students. It's just I'm not the typical student. I'm not the regular old Joe Schmo student that thinks exactly like the teacher, has the same beliefs and things like that and can have a good relationship. No, I'm the student who if the teacher says something that contradicts with my faith, I'm going to go against it. I'm going to say something about it. And that's the real challenge I had because it's not the teachers. It's just that the teachers see something in me that's different from every student. And it goes back to that thing of something that goes against what people believe. And people kind of get a little defensive about that. And that's the challenge that I've really experienced is not the teachers themselves because they teach well. They teach me what I need to learn and get the grade or whatever that honestly in the next 5 years I'll completely forget about everything and probably be working from 9 to 5 and never remember what the heck, how to use a comma. A lot of them don't have anything wrong with other students, but it's just me in general who is the different student. I'm the one-off student. So
No. I get it. And so so many things come up for me with this. And so one of the challenges I think with anybody who is kind of working their own path, running through their own path, following whatever that guidance is, I think when you step away from the mainstream, whether we're talking about lifestyle, or we're talking about religion, we're talking about politics, we're talking about education, I think when we kind of run as a rebel, you're going to have to realize that we're going to be running upstream. We're going to be trying to swim upstream, and it is going to be that challenge. So one of the things, because I told you, and you know that wonderful phrase, you know, being open, honest, and transparent. So even though you're this, you know, young man and doing college and finishing high school with this stuff, and in all honesty, you know, and you can and you present so far as, you know, this compassionate, talented, and intelligent young man, but what are you afraid of? What is it that you're afraid of in having to live in this world with differences and your own fears and with everything that's going on? What's going on down deep that creates fear in you?
Oh, man. We're going there. We're going down to the basement. We're going down. We're going there. So things that really
So think about what is if you have to encapsulate, because when somebody comes of a faith, and remember, and you know this well, that faith is in anything is a belief in something unseen, and so by its own definition, it's a belief that we can wrap our mind around, our heart around, our life around. And so living at 18 years old, finishing high school, getting some college, transferring off to go to college soon, what is, if you had to encapsulate one fear to start with, or at least one fear that you feel is the big one, what would that be? Because I kind of want to at least dissect this a little bit.
Yeah. I have so many fears, to be honest with you. But if we're going to talk about the one fear, and this kind of relates to something that we have in Christian culture that I find unfortunate, but in Christianity, being married is such a big thing. Being in relationship with somebody is such a big thing. It's highly praised and it's highly honored. And it seems as if, like, the younger you're married, the better it is, and the more time you're able to grow with somebody and you're able to live life with somebody and experience life with somebody. And it comes to a point where, though, a lot of people in the Christian church, including me, have this fear of, oh, man, I'm 18, and my friend who's 21 is already married, and he already has a kid on the way, and it's like, oh, man, I'm falling behind. And I know people who are 24 and they're not married. I know people in my church who are 33 who aren't married, 37 who aren't married. And there's kind of
so
this negative stigma.
So what's the fear?
The fear of being single for the rest of your life.
Okay. So, all right, let's stop with that one. Because that's a nice medium basement kind of fear that we can start with. So you've heard this, and I know people who are listening to this have an idea. When they heard you're 18 and afraid you're not going to get married or find the right person. Bro, you're 18 years old. You're 18. You're not old enough. So I just want to crack up at this, because statistics would tell you, most people have heard that most marriages are going to end up in divorce. Half of them, not most of them, half of them are going to end up in divorce. And by research, those who get married even earlier, like say 18, 19, 20, that number goes up way higher. So to feel like you're, and I could just imagine our people listening to this who are thinking, this young man's wanting to get married, he's 18 years old, is afraid of not finding somebody. Most of probably the audience may be thinking like, man, I wasn't even close to being ready to settle down with a life partner, a marriage, husband, wife, whoever that would be. And so when you say not finding that right person, I think the wisdom or the more seasoned, experienced person is kind of laughing, going, "You've got a lifetime to find, and you know, to find that person, to go through school and start working and meet people." So my next question is, there's the fear underneath that. So a fear of not finding someone to spend your life with. What is fear again? How do you define fear? What is fear? And I'm going to speak from a Christian perspective. What is fear as it relates to the divine?
Fear is the absence of God.
Oh, is that what that is? Oh, so are we saying then, if we have faith in the divine, if we have faith in God, are we going to be afraid of finding that partner? Not finding that partner? Do we? So this is one that I think a lot of times I love to play with, because it's the battle. It's the battle of what is faith and what is lived. So if we truly have faith and we're going to profess that faith, we got to try and walk it hard. So do you really think that if you have that deep faith that God is going to let you walk through your whole life without finding someone to share it with?
No, because here, let's go to the faith aspect now. I actually have a verse for you. 1 John 4:18, it's talking about fear and how in order for us to get rid of that fear, and trust me, this has something to do with what you're saying. It says, such love has no fear because perfect love expels all fear. And I just love that verse so much because, yeah, I do
so,
have that fear. And like you said, it's a constant battle.
Yes.
And it's a constant reminder of, hey, I'm feeling this fear right now. I'm feeling and I'm experiencing this thing right now, and I'm experiencing this thought. But as I learn from you and as I read in the Bible and as I talk to other people, the goal is not to focus on the thing that's bothering you so much, but the goal is to move your mind onto something else that can make you feel love, that can expel that fear, and reminding yourself that there's no need to be afraid because there's a perfect love out there that expels all fear. So it's a constant reminder.
Oh, very good, young grasshopper Jedi in training. That's excellent. So, you know, the big lesson I really do want all of us to be able to get is I understand the fear. I get it. And there's many things that we can be distracted by in this world, not to say that it's not real, because we know there's problems in not only our city, our country, around the world. There's people hurting people, and there's politicians that lie. And I know there's all kinds of icky crap going on in the world. And as we've talked about, it's kind of like this idea that the world is this big tornado. And as a person who is looking to connect to this divine consciousness, this space, our job is to not get caught in the tornado, is to step back from those winds into that eye, into that calm, and realize that, you know, the battle is this moment. Can I find appreciation this moment? Can I look to my sister, my brother, my friend, my spouse, my husband, wife, my partner, whoever that I know loves me, accepts me, that cares about me in a way that I don't have to be afraid? And I, you know, and again, coming from that fundamental faith, that Christian faith, you know, we turn it over. We've got to turn it over. And I have found in my life that I can get caught up in fear and drama and anger and all kinds of crap, but I do realize when I connect to that divine creator, God, Jesus, that person in my life, when I get there, I know that fear, anxiety, and anger, for me, goes away. And I know that sounds like people going, oh, he's just thumping. No, because I've tested this. I've done this many times when I've been, you know, in a state of panic or anxiety or stress out, and to truly take the time to connect to that space and such. So I'm real curious, because if you, as we getting close to our end of our time, I really want to get a sense of what is it that you feel you need to do in order to live the life that you want to do as it relates to what's going on in the world, with the challenges of the world. What do you need to do to become the person that you feel you were destined to be, to make this world at least a little bit better? What's your big goals that you need to accomplish?
Well, before I get to that, I want to say something that you said about dealing with fear and anxiety and peace. I have another verse for you, and it says here in Job 30, verse 1, or verse 20, it says here, "I cry to you, O God, but you don't answer. I stand before you, but you don't even look." And another verse, in verse 16, it also says, "And now my life seeps away, depression haunts my days. At night my bones are filled with pain, which gnaws at me relentlessly. With a strong hand, God grabs my shirt. He grips me by the collar of my coat, and he has thrown me into the mud, nothing more than dust and ashes." And an encouragement I really just want to give to people is just, it's okay to feel anxious. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel depressed. It's okay to go through these moments and these seasons. What's not okay is to stay in those seasons forever. What's not okay is to be stuck in those moments forever. And Ray, you've known and you've seen me over this semester how much I've come out of such a weird and awkward season, from being very quiet and being very shy to now being very open and fun and exciting. But it's a process. It's a journey. And we continue to go and go and go. And life and everything we go through, everything's going to pass. Everything's going to happen. But what matters is, how do we run the race? And do we continue to go from glory to glory? Do you continue to strive upwards? Are we okay with being down and sad the rest of our lives? So that's the encouragement I have. It's okay to be sad in that season, but it's not okay to stay in that season forever. That's just a quick encouragement I wanted to give. But going back to your question of what do I do to be able to live the life that I have? What do I do to be able to live and achieve the things I want to achieve? I'm going to throw you with some more scripture, Ray. Yeah, I love scripture. Scripture is great. And you went to seminary, so you love scripture too. It says here in Proverbs 16:1, we can make our own plans, but the Lord gives the right answer. And in verse 3, it also says, commit your actions to the Lord, and your plans will succeed. All I have to
get out of the way?
That's something I struggle with. I need to get out of the way. I have such a hard time, and I think the thing that comes from it is fear of not knowing what's going to happen in the future, but also it's a sense of pride as well. It's a sense of, oh, look at me and look at the way I live and look how sometimes I can even get caught up with this. And sometimes you can get caught up in the storm of, oh, look at me and look how more mature I am than other people around me. And comparing myself to other people, comparing myself to people who maybe are worse off than me or better off than me. And then this competitive drive inside of me to be like, no, I got to do better. I got to do this. I got to be better than this person, or I got to continue to stay above this person. And when we compare ourselves to people, that steals the opportunity for us to live the life that we're called to live. Because as it says here, all we got to do is commit our actions to the Lord. All we got to do is just let the Lord guide us. And I have let the Lord guide me, but there are still certain areas in my life that I need to let go of. And it's a process. And it's a sanctification process that does not end. And it's going to consistently happen throughout my whole life, where God's going to see things inside of me and continue to break me and purify me as fine as gold until I get to that day where I'm completely clean of everything I've done after he's completely sanctified me and purified me. But for now, all I have to do is, one, have faith in him, and two, let him change me on the inside. And that's a process. And that's a journey that we're going to have to continuously go through. So, yeah, just committing my ways to the Lord and letting him take control over certain areas in my life.
Well, we're gonna have to continue this in another venture, because you've opened up a lot of the can of worms of other things that we'll have to talk about. But I do wanna thank you, Harrison, for sharing this. I totally agree on so many of the things you're talking about. It is a process. It is an opportunity for people to be challenged, because life isn't gonna always give us home runs. We're going to run into people, and we're going to run into circumstances where people are nasty, and we're going to maybe get cheated. But that's all, for me, that's grist for the mill. That builds character. That's what we learn from, grow from, evolve from. Hopefully it makes us a little stronger in that way. So I do appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. And I, again, I'd love to have you at some point in the not too distant future. We'll come back on and hit it again. In that way. So thanks for jumping on the call with me, Harrison. I so appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ray.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you had a chance to enjoy touching base and hearing a little bit about Harrison and his journey. He is a fascinating young man. And one of the things I would say just before I share with you a free gift is I do think that the high school kids and the college kids are in a really challenged state. I think there's issues with not only them becoming comfortable with themselves, but comfortable in their environment, comfortable in their own skin. And I know that's a challenge because we want to be able to be comfortable, and we want to be tolerant. We want to accept and celebrate other people. So this is something I'd like to continue conversation with people, so they have a chance to hear kind of what's happening in the school world in different ways. I just want to share another gift for those of you who are wanting kind of fun little things to read. We touched on education today. So if you want to, you can go to thecalloftheSoul.org on the website, and you can go to the store, and if you go down and click on a book on education, and you connect with me via any of the Work with Ray tabs, if you work with Ray, whether it's coaching or talking or speaking, you can submit a little note and just say, hey, Ray, I heard you on the Call of the Soul radio show, News for the Soul. I'd love to hear or read about your book on the Forgotten Secrets of Education. It's a fun story, folks. It's a narrative that helps us to understand maybe what healthy education can be like, at least from a teaching standpoint, and how we connect with our students. But anyway, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to chat and to be a part of the News for the Soul. And so until the next time, I look forward to chatting with you all. I hope you all have a blessed week. Take care.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, man. We all love to hear the good news. So we all should rush to hear the good news. But we have to find the good news.
NSTN, News for the Soul at its very best.
NSTN,
News for the Soul at its very best.
NSTN,
News for the Soul at its very best.
Yeah, man, just log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Can you hear me?
We are a life-changing talk radio. We give you good news to keep you on the go. And you can also share the good news, you know. And that's the way we keep in the flow.
Wah!
We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We not go put none of the negative in there. We not go put none of the negative in there.
NSTN, NSTN,
News for the Soul at its very best.
NSTN, NSTN,
News for the Soul at its very best.
Log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Every time, come hear the good news, share the good news. And we all feeling good for the good news.